Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer, Chris Clements, and Dark Money, Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer, Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble. Chris Clements is off on a family vacation. Good for him and the family. He can tell us all about it when he gets back. And well, that'll be later this week. So today, I wanted to do a little reflection. And because there's been a lot of discussion and over the last few months, and it's kind of, I feel like over the holidays, there was more and more writing about, you know, the caustic nature of the themes coming from the Trump campaign and Trump supporters and Biden campaign and Biden supporters, that, you know, the Trump people, this is the worst thing that could ever happen, is Biden being reelected. The Biden people, it's a threat to democracy for Trump to be elected again. And what I want to just kind of reflect upon and have you think about, and we can maybe even start a discussion, maybe you can give us some input about this. But I'm a firm believer that the republic is bigger than one person, that the foundations that were laid in place by our founding fathers made it so that one person could not take down the country. I mean, yes, as Alexander Hamilton argued in the Federalist Papers, under the Constitution, we have one president. I mean, there was an argument. There was a discussion at the Constitutional Convention about whether there should be a council to head the government. And he argued strongly and passionately and persuasively that it should be one, even though they had the experience of King George, who had abused his power as an individual, you know, as a monarch. Some were worried that a president would become a monarch. So they put different things in place in the Constitution to prevent that from happening. They ultimately settled on one president. And the president has, you know, it's a pretty powerful position, no doubt about that. But it was only one component of our government, one of three. He or she is the executive. Then we have the legislative, made up the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. And then we have judiciary. So three branches of government. It's just the, you know, basic civics 101. But there's a purpose for that. I mean, and I think people lose sight of the genius of what our founding fathers put in place. And I think it's because there isn't, I mean, one, it's not taught enough in school. The whole aspect of how our founding happened as a country and what we came from and why it happened. And that's a sad thing. It's something that needs to be rectified. It certainly surprises me when, you know, as someone who grew up very steeped in the writings of our founders. My parents were very big on teaching us about that. I mean, I read the Federalist Papers as a teenager. Not that I absorbed a lot of it, but you got a sense, and, you know, read history books and biographies about our founding fathers. This was an amazing, amazing time. Amazing intellect. And these men, you know, pulled ideas from all over and from all over the course of all through the course of history to come up with a system that has been pretty good. I mean, I make the argument And I stand by this no matter what. I mean, there's just no question in my mind. The United States is the greatest nation on earth. It's the greatest nation in the history of mankind. And no country has seen the expansion of freedom, economic growth, longevity, or well-being of its people the way the last 236 years have been for the United States. I mean, it is the greatest nation that's ever existed. And there's so many people today who want to diminish the nation. They want to diminish the country. They want to diminish our system of government. And it's because they have a gripe about one thing or another. But the founders didn't say that we were perfect. We were attempting to go towards perfection, that we were striving to be better. And we're still in that experiment. It's working. There are hiccups, absolutely. But it's working. It's working better than anywhere else in the world. I mean, anywhere else. I mean, I remember when I worked for John Shattuck, I went and I subbed for him. He was supposed to speak at a government class at a high school. And he couldn't, so I went in to speak to it was AP government at this high school. And I started, and I've said this before on this podcast, but I started with a question because I thought, oh, this would be a good jumping off point to talk about, you know, America. And I said, who here believes that the United States is the greatest nation on earth? This was before 9/11. It was May of 2001. Maybe it was April. It was before the end of the school year, but it was in 2001. And less than half the hands went up. And I was shocked. And the first thing that came to mind was the quote from Ronald Reagan in his final address to the nation, when he said, we're one generation away from losing our freedom. And I realized that these kids, for whatever reason, had been taught in a way that did not help them understand what was so amazing about America. And, you know, then it led to the next question, which I didn't ask, but because I knew they didn't have a good answer. Well, if not America, where? I mean, where else do people risk their lives to get here? I mean, it is, you know, as Reagan talked about the shining city, and John Winthrop, you know, long before that, the shining city on a hill. It is a place of freedom that people want to come to. And so, but if you listen to the hysteria coming from both the left and the right in today's environment, you would think that the future of our republic does hinge on one person. You know, as I said, in the case of the left, they believe if Joe Biden is not reelected, then the country is lost to a dictatorship and democracy is gone. And in the case of the hard right, the MAGA base, they believe if Donald Trump is not elected president, the country is lost to a totalitarian regime of woke ideology. And yeah, you can make some arguments that there's definitely things that have happened in our country that have been negative on that regard. And you can make some arguments that some of the stuff Trump did after the election in 2020 do tend to be extra constitutional, i.e. unconstitutional. But those are things that are playing themselves out. At the end of the day, Joe Biden was inaugurated. He won the presidency. He was inaugurated. He's the president of the United States. We have an election coming up in 2024. And we're going to see what's going to happen. Now, Donald Trump could no sooner become a dictator than I can bench press 500 pounds. And Joe Biden could no sooner drive our country into socialism than I could fly my Tesla to the moon. These two individuals are not going to destroy the country, depending on which one gets elected. I mean, yes, we have strong opinions about these men, but the most common opinion in America right now is that we don't want these two as the options. The majority of Americans don't want either of these guys running for president. I mean, what does that tell you? But the scare tactics employed by both sides about the stakes fundamentally, in my mind, fundamentally ignore the wisdom and sobriety of the American voter. I mean, it ignores the very foundations of our constitutional structure, because that's the fundamental problems. Both extremes have either forgotten or they willfully ignore the Constitution. And you see that in the things that people say, things that people talk about. I mean, it becomes a situation where people literally talk out loud about a civil war. And I'm sorry, just that's not going to happen. Will it be crazy? Yeah, there's going to be some crazy things. We've seen that before. In the 2020, we saw the riots that were driven by BLM. And then we saw election changes because of COVID, which probably helped Biden. Was it illegal? No. Was it the job of the Republicans to challenge the changes that were made in some states? Yes, they didn't do it before the election. It was too late. I mean, that's on them for doing that. So we'll see how this plays out. But I mean, the fact that Joe Biden is quoted saying, if Donald Trump wasn't running, I probably wouldn't be running. I mean, this guy literally is so narcissistic to think that he is the savior that can stop the man who's going to destroy democracy. I mean, we have to get back to a situation, I think, in this country where we have public servants who serve with humility. Now, is that possible? I don't know. I mean, maybe we've gone so far beyond what public service is about. I mean, it is frightening to see members of Congress who are not there to be congressmen, they're there to be celebrities. And that's tragic. But we have to, I mean, maybe it's just my desire to sleepwalk through 2024 and get beyond this election, because I think it's going to be very discouraging. As someone who believes in the greatness of this country, that we are really making it seem, I mean, we're really going to the lowest common denominator in the way that these two campaigns are playing themselves out. It does remind me, so I have, and I've said this before, and many people who know me know that I am a big fan of National Review. I've read National Review since I was a teenager. The story that I tell is that my dad had a subscription to National Review. My mom had a subscription to The New American. That was a John Birch Society publication. At the time, National Review came out every other week. John Birch Society magazine came out once a month. So I had more influence of National Review. National Review, just in the last about 3 months ago, became a monthly. They moved to a monthly. But I wanted to read a couple things to kind of, one, this explains where I am personally and where I think most level-headed Americans should fall. But I'll just read, this is a part of the National Review mission statement, which I think is really, really good. The United States grew from the seedbeds of Athens, Rome, and Jerusalem, and especially in English traditions of accountable government from Magna Carta to the Glorious Revolution. America built on the best of this inheritance through the colonial experience, the Revolution and the Declaration of Independence, the drafting and ratification of the Constitution, and seminal events since, including the Civil War, the extension of civil rights, to create a great experiment in self-government and a truly exceptional nation. All of our efforts are geared towards preserving that experiment and the foundations of American exceptionalism, in particular, the ordered liberty that reflects the founders' belief in our ability to govern ourselves, as well as their clear-eyed view that we need institutional and cultural constraints, personal virtue, and above all, religious faith to maintain the predicates of freedom. I mean, that just nails it for me. And it goes to the very basics of what I think civil society needs to be about. It's not about screaming at each other and doubting the intentions of others. It is about the belief in our ability to govern ourselves and the clear-eyed view that we need institutional and cultural restraints, personal virtue, and religious faith. I mean, that's the, to me, that just nails it. Now, I came across a piece in Politico. This was a few weeks ago, maybe even more than a month ago. It was a profile of Nancy Pelosi. Now, for those of you who know me, I have been very, very critical of Nancy Pelosi. In 2010, as I was part of running independent expenditure efforts in over 100 congressional districts, Nancy Pelosi was the main event that we used. She was the person that we said we have to stop. She was the person that we attacked. I mean, I'll just, you know, bluntly, that's the way it was. That's what happened. And, you know, we viewed that as a way to help elect Republicans to the Congress. And, but then I read this profile, and there was something that struck me about it. And I'm just going to read a couple things that I wrote and then quote from the article. The vitriol of today and sharp differences politically lead us to think in absolutes. Conservatives tend to think of themselves as the true patriots of protecting freedom and what the flag stands for. Liberals are more likely to be critical of some aspect of America or American life. But this exchange between former Speaker Nancy Pelosi and a Politico reporter is a stark reminder that it doesn't matter your political philosophy, you can still be moved by patriotic symbols. And so here is the article. He writes, however, as the day ended and her detail dropped me off at my hotel, she spoke in the manner of someone shaped by January 6th, by the attack on her husband, and by God only knows how many threats against her. It was also the manner of somebody who could be looking to justify another run for office, or somebody who could be, in her own way, explaining why she will retire. Pelosi was discussing her plans to write a new book and call it Our Flag Was Still There. It's that section of the national anthem, she explained, when I jump up and down. Proof through the night that we were through the night now, that we were going through it, that our flag was still there. Now, that struck me. Because I revere the flag. And every time I hear the national anthem, it brings tears to my eyes. And what I realized is that while I disagree with Nancy Pelosi almost 100%, I can admit that she's a patriot, that she loves the flag, and that while we disagree on the direction of how we get to where we're going as a country, it's not my position to judge her intentions, because she cares about this country just as much as I do. We may have differences about what that means, but we have to get past this idea that it's the enemy, because we are United States of America. The enemy wants to destroy us, and we have to keep our eyes looking outward to defend ourselves. Yes, we pay attention to those things inward. We make those arguments about where we stand, about the direction of the country, about the policies. And yes, we have to be careful about things that could happen within our country that could undermine our ability and our experiment of freedom. But we need to take the vitriol out of this system. And maybe we never will. And maybe I'm just going to be depressed about that. But I am an optimist. And I do believe that we can get back to a civil debate where we can have disagreements without being disagreeable. So be thinking about that as we head into 2024. I'm sure we'll touch on it. I'm sure that we'll see examples of that not happening. But hopefully we'll see examples of it, of civil debate that we can highlight and show that we can actually have good debates and we don't have to view things in absolutes of winners and losers, but that we are all pulling together in this great experiment we call America. Thanks for listening. God bless.